I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, President Donald Trump is declaring war on homelessness, not by offering housing and mental health solutions, but by demanding that the unhoused move out immediately from the streets of Washington, D.C. Trump's justification centers on combating alleged crime spikes, but violent crime is actually at a multi-decade low in D.C. Also, last month, Trump signed an executive order aiming to clear homeless individuals from public spaces across the nation, targeting those with mental health issues or substance abuse problems. We're going to hear what this means at the national level, but also here in the streets of San Antonio. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
TPR tells the stories of our city, our struggles, and our triumphs. Leaving a legacy gift to Texas Public Radio helps keep those stories alive. Find out how to create your legacy at tpr.org/legacy.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Homelessness is a problem. You see it here in San Antonio, across the nation, and in the nation's capital. But it's a problem caused by the rising cost of housing, low wages, lack of mental health services, substance abuse issues, and other factors. But President Donald Trump has his solution: ban it. Ban homelessness, make it go away by making the people go away, make them go someplace else. First, I want to say I don't think Trump's executive order about homelessness is about homelessness. I suspect, as others say this as well, this is another news cycle distraction from the Trump Epstein files. Also, I think this is a way to try to prevent protest from happening in Washington, D.C. in the future. But for right now, let's look at how the unhoused will be impacted by this policy reversal by the Trump administration. Later, we're going to hear about the San Antonio's Haven for Hope and how these policies could be impacting their programs. We're joined right now by Jesse Rabinowitz. He's the communications director for the National Homelessness Law Center. Jesse, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So in Trump's language, when he's talking about his executive orders and what he's doing, he seems to be deliberately conflating the issues of homelessness with criminal activity. He uses words like disorderly behavior, sudden confrontations, violent attacks. What is he really talking about here?
I'm not sure that he knows either, but we have to be clear about what he is talking about. He is talking about forcibly either kidnapping or imprisoning people experiencing homelessness in Washington, D.C. for sleeping outside, even when they have nowhere else to go. That's not only unconstitutional, it's humane, and it will make homelessness worse. I don't think that this is a distraction from his failed presidency, although that is certainly at play. I think this is what happens when you have a white supremacist president who is empowered to target homeless people in D.C. who are primarily black and brown people. And we need Congress to check his power and to tell him to keep his hands off of D.C.
Well, does the president normally, any president, tackle this issue? Is homelessness something that this is how they address homelessness, by getting so involved with clearing out the streets of the nation's capital?
This is unprecedented. What I want people to know is that, unlike in other cities, most green spaces and parks in D.C. are controlled by the federal government. So the homeless folks here living on those parks and in those parks will be among the first to feel the brunt of his anti-homeless policies. But as he made clear during his press conference yesterday, what he starts in D.C., he is going to expand to the rest of the country. So this needs to be a warning to cities across the country to focus on getting folks into housing and rejecting this idea that we can arrest or punish our way out of homelessness.
Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation as we talk about Donald Trump's solutions for homelessness. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can text us at that call-in number as well. So why use this harmful language, this heavy-handed, you know, talking about, you know, the executive order that he signed in July is called Ending Crime and Disorder on America's Streets. Doesn't sound like he's really that interested in the people who are unhoused.
That's absolutely correct. Donald Trump is not interested in helping people who live outside, nor is he actually interested in safety. DC is the most policed city in this country. We know that real safety comes when people have their needs met, needs like housing, support, access to food. But Trump and the Republicans just gutted funding for mental health care and health care that people need. And they're proposing a budget that slashes funding for affordable housing. They're not interested in safety. They're interested in paving the way for the Trump administration to exercise their authoritarian desire to round people they don't like and people they don't want to see up and force them into government-run detention camps. This is textbook authoritarianism. We cannot let it happen.
Well, there are people who look at Trump's, you know, his executive order. He says he's going to confine people, use civil commitment and institutional care for individuals deemed mentally ill or addicted who live unsheltered. They see that and say, that's a good idea. Get these people help. Put them in a facility where they can get mental health help, or they can get detox and help.
We need to focus on getting people the help that they want and need. We know right now that a lot of people want help, especially help getting a mental health care, substance abuse treatment, then can't get it because wait lists are too long or it's too expensive. But again, the Republicans just gutted funding for those very programs. They're not actually interested in getting people help. We have to be real about what Trump is actually talking about. He is talking about returning to large-scale mental health hospitals and government-run detention camps. We tried massive asylums in this country. They didn't work. They were inhumane, and we don't do them anymore. But consistent with the Trump administration, he wants to move us backwards. We cannot let that happen. It should go without saying that at no time in human history has rounding people up and putting them in forced camps been a good idea. But again, that is the very thing that the Trump administration is proposing. That's incredibly dangerous. As a social worker, I know that forced treatment is both unethical, and it also doesn't work. The best solution we have, the only solution we have to homelessness, the one that is backed by data, that is cost-effective, that works across the country, is to get folks housed first and to provide them with the wraparound supports they need. Anything else will make homelessness worse.
But in the meantime, I mean, they're starting now picking people up off the streets of Washington, D.C. They're going down K Street or wherever, Massachusetts Avenue, and just, you know, picking people up. And are they going to take them to the county jail? They don't have any facilities like that built yet.
We don't know. We have absolutely no idea what their plans are. And that's terrifying. But it should go without saying that rounding people up because you don't want to see them is not okay. I used to do homeless street outreach to the very folks and to the very camps that Donald Trump is talking about. People were living out there because rent is too high and because there was no room in shelters in DC. People didn't want to be out there. They were out there because they had nowhere else to go. And I had a few clients who were fortunate enough to get matched to rental assistance and supportive services. And when they got matched to those resources, they got their lives back on track. They addressed their healthcare concerns. And they didn't live outside anymore. The solution to homelessness is housing with supports. And if Donald Trump was actually interested in solving homelessness, he would fund proven solutions like housing and support. But again, he's not interested in actually helping people. He's interested in furthering his power and enriching his billionaire friends.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Trump's orders to take these policies across the nation to cities like San Antonio. What would that look like? You know, how can Trump order cities across the nation to adapt anti-homelessness policies? Why things that we know do work, like harm reduction, how is that being de-emphasized a complete reversal in policies trying to address homelessness into a more of a harsh way to just remove homelessness and get it out of sight. Is that going to work? Do you support something like that? Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Susan, I'll get you on the air when we come back from this one-minute break to stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Jason Rabinowitz, Communications Director at the National Homelessness Law Center. We're talking about Donald Trump's orders on dealing with homelessness in Washington, D.C. and across the nation. And let's go to the phone lines. The number is 833-877-8255. And Susan, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hey, David, thanks for taking my call. I just the irony that he's going after homeless people to try and cut back on crime when he's a convicted felon. He's a criminal living in the people's house. He's a pedophile. He's a rapist. And he's a traitor to the United States. And how many laws has he broken already in 7 months in this term that are impeachable offenses? Thank you for taking my call.
Well, Susan, thank you for calling in. Not a lot to work with there, just, you know, anti-Trump, sentiment there. But what is your reaction to that, Jesse?
I think it speaks to how not only Donald Trump's policies are deeply unpopular, but people are paying attention and people are waiting for Congress to act. We need Congress to step in and stop the harm that the Trump administration is doing. One thing that we're demanding Congress do right now is to pass the Housing Not Handcuffs Act. The Housing Not Handcuffs Act prevents the federal government from treating homelessness as a crime. It would prevent the federal government from rounding up homeless people in DC, and it would prevent the federal government from rounding up homeless people across the country. We need people to pressure their elected officials to do their jobs and pass the Housing Not Handcuffs Act. People can learn more at housingnothandcuffs.org.
The thing is, though, you know, Trump and these orders, these are blunt, oversimplified strategies, if you want to call it a strategy, that doesn't really represent a cohesive, you know, plan to address homelessness at all. I mean, how does it help anybody to just pick people up and what they're going to move them to Baltimore? How does that work?
Well, let's be clear. If they pick people up in D.C. and move them to Baltimore, that would be kidnapping. That is illegal. You cannot move people like that.
Well, they do it to people who are undocumented all the time.
That's absolutely true. That's super fair. And we know today the Trump administration in D.C. rounded up 7 people at a Home Depot for being undocumented and arrested them. And
that happened yesterday here in San Antonio. So, yes, yeah. It's happening.
This is just the start of what's happening in D.C. But to your question, this doesn't help anybody. This is not a plan to solve homelessness. The Trump administration has reversed course on proven solutions to solve homelessness. They have proposed budgets that gut housing programs that people need. They've fired most of the national experts on homelessness who work in the federal government. They're not interested in solving homelessness, which is shameful, because the leading cause of homelessness in this country is the fact that people can't afford rent. But the fact that people can't afford rent is also the biggest pain point on most people's wallets. People want solutions. People are tired of scapegoating people just trying to survive. We need politicians at all levels of the government to do their jobs and make sure that people can afford to make ends meet. And to me, that starts with making sure everyone has a safe place to live.
So HUD, federal rent subsidies, are basically ending, right?
We'll see what Congress does. We're hopeful that Congress can stem the tide of Trump's worst instincts, but we are not expecting good things to come out of Congress, which is why we need state and local governments to step up and fill in the gaps caused by the Trump presidency.
Let's go to another caller. Renee, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say to Susan, who just called, you are right on, because she is exactly right. He is a criminal. But second of all, I would like to talk about a small experience of mine that blew my mind. In San Antonio, we have a place called Town Twin Village. And that is a place where the Town Twin was a drive-in on the east side of San Antonio. And I know the place very well. I used to sneak in there as a kid. I'm an old-timer. I used to sneak in there as a kid. And then it was abandoned. And some organization, which I can't quite remember, has moved into it. And they have built a tiny village there that houses homeless people. These are tiny homes. I had gone there because I knew they were tiny homes, and I want to put a casita in my backyard. And so I was going to go there and just ask them who were the builders. And instead, they gave me a tour of the place, you know, which I was really interested in. It is fabulous. It is not only the place, it is the philosophy of it. There are tiny homes, and they are for homeless people. And it's like in little, I don't know how to describe it, little pods of like eight tiny homes. They come together and they have like, you know, little barbecues. They have a lead person who takes concerns up to the management. And then they also have on site, they also have a doctor on site. They have a mental health worker. They have a dentist. They have all these health options for the people who are living there. They also have a pantry, free food for the people that need it there. They have security, and it's just a fabulous place. The guy who gave me the tour was a guy by the name of Ty Grant. He's a lead case aide, and he told me to tell my friends, which I have done, that if they ever want to see the place, to come down. And one more quick thing. I know I'm taking up probably too much time, but one more quick thing. That place got picked by the New York Times as the example the nation should follow. That is the direction we should go in. And, oh, just one quick thing. I asked him when I was taking the tour, I said, well, what about the Trump cuts? Is that going to affect y'all? And he said, Ty Grant said, no, it's not, because we are secure for, I don't know, I don't remember how many years he said, but it is a place that is safe. It is fabulous. And they are adding on to it. Like I said, yeah, they have tiny homes.
They just announced an expansion.
That's right. They're going to have an apartment. Now, that's a guy I would like to see you guys bring on to TPR Talks. That would be a fantastic one. But that is something that the nation should follow. We should be using that example.
Well, the project is developed by the Housing First Community Coalition. Town Twin Village is a project designed to address chronic homelessness across San Antonio's population. It's for people who are 55 and older. And there's a total of 204 homes there specifically designed to address these issues. And so thanks, Renee, for bringing that to our attention. And so, Jesse, you want to comment on that real quick?
Sure. I think it shows what most people know, that people don't want to live outside. When they get offered a place to live and services that meet their needs, they take the opportunity. Personally, I'm not a fan of tiny homes. I think people deserve to live in apartments that just like... live in apartments or live, but if that's what people choose and that's what people want, or if that's an interim step towards housing, I think that is a great thing for a local community to do. But it shows that housing works.
Let's go to Claiborne on the phones. Yeah. I'm sorry. Let's go to Claiborne. You're on the air.
Hi. This is straight out of the 1933 playbook and the Enabling Act. They are targeting a social bar, namely the homeless. The District of Columbia, which has a population of 702,250 people, has no congressional representation, has no recourse, has no county or state government to protect them, us, but I'm home right now. And the population of the DMV is like 6.3 million people. This is a dry run, and if they get away with it here, they're going to hit the rest of the country with it.
All right, Claiborne, thank you for your comments on that. So are we seeing a trend, though? What is happening with homelessness, you know, the numbers-wise, Jesse, across the nation? Is it growing still?
Well, I want to start with what's happening here in D.C. Homelessness is down, just like crime is down. But you wouldn't know that from the lies that Trump told during his press conference yesterday. But you're right. There is a huge homelessness problem in this country. It is shameful that in the richest country in the world, more than half a million people, more than 700,000 people experience homelessness each night. It doesn't have to be like that, but the Trump administration can always find money for jails and more police or a new ballroom at the White House, but they can't find money to help people. Their priorities are backwards. The reason there's homelessness in DC is the same reason there's homelessness in Texas. Housing's too expensive. We need to lower the cost of housing and help people make ends meet.
All right, let's go to the caller, Cecilia. Cecilia, you're on the air.
Hi there, how are you? Well, I definitely agree with the gentleman that just spoke. The problem is, we have homelessness because, well, let me put it to you very simply. Look at the minimum wage. They haven't touched it in how many years? But still we have Congress saying, oh, well, we haven't had a raise in so many years, and they want more money, and they have secure health care that we pay out of our taxes. But let me put it to you easily. We just need to choose what we use our tax money on. And if we just stopped Trump from sending $4 billion to Israel every year and use that money locally, that would help a lot. It would resolve many, many problems. And on the other hand, we send a country that has free education, college education, and free health care throughout the country. We are giving them $4 billion a year. While here at home, we can't even get the minimum wage up a dollar. It's ridiculous. It's just knowing, where to use or better use our tax money, and people should have more say so and not just let Trump decide where.
All
Because we
right.
know, the way he does things,
Sure.
the plan is not bad if only he cared, really.
All right, Cecilia, thank you for calling. I'm going to go next to another caller. Let's go to it's a Dana next. And Dana, go ahead. You go on the air.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're short on time, but I wanted to get you on.
Okay, thank you. So my question is more about San Antonio in specific, and I'm an older woman, and going in the parks in San Antonio, you do see homeless people, and I don't feel safe. And you do see, things have happened. People have been killed in the parks and the trails and stuff like that in San Antonio. So I'm just wondering, taking politics out of it, how are we going to deal with these kind of problems where we don't feel safe going to the parks because there are homeless issues in the parks?
All right, Dana, thanks for calling in with that. So this is the public safety issue, the side of things, Jesse.
Absolutely. Thanks for that question. And I'm sorry that happened to you. Everyone deserves to feel safe, just like everyone deserves to have a place to live. The solution is the same. The solution is getting folks housing. Donald Trump's plan and the plan of his right-wing billionaire allies at the Cicero Institute, who are based in Texas and behind much of this anti-homelessness legislation, will actually make homelessness worse. Throwing folks in jail saddles them with debt that makes it harder for them to get an apartment. Evicting encampments trashes people's documents that they need to get housing and throws away their medicine that they need to get safe. The fastest, best way to get homeless people off the streets is to get them into housing. But again, the Trump administration is proposing cuts to housing. We need people to get loud and contact their elected officials and say, we need more housing. And you have to make sure that that housing is targets people who are living outside and people who are experiencing homelessness. We can solve homelessness, but there's a lack of political will. We need people to get loud and pressure their elected officials to make real change.
So what about this executive order? It seems like he is exerting power that he does not have. He doesn't have authority over cities and how they deal with their homelessness population. So, I mean, does this executive order in and of itself, does it have any legal effect?
I think he's doing two main things with the executive order. One is showing his racist, backwards, and antiquated views about homelessness. The fact that the presidential administration not only thought these awful things about people experiencing homelessness, but felt comfortable writing them down and putting the seal of the White House on them is shameful and shows how out of touch the Trump administration is. But he's also hinting that he is considering tying federal funding to cities that make it a crime to be homeless. And we're very concerned about what that means. People in Congress need to hear from folks. But I want to talk about who's behind the executive order. I mentioned recently
we got about 20 seconds.
The Cicero Institute is a billionaire-backed think tank based in Texas that is exerting undue influence on the Trump administration. They are behind the grants passed Supreme Court ruling, and they're trying to pass anti-homeless laws across the country, including one they've successfully passed in Texas. We need people to rise up and beat the billionaires, because we know that the billionaires' money can be beaten back with people power. To learn more, join us at housing.handcuffs.org.
Jesse Rabinowitz, he is the communications director at the National Homelessness Law Center. Jesse, thanks for joining us for this half hour. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to Haven for Hope here in San Antonio. What do they see? What is the homeless trend in San Antonio? What's their reaction to these orders from Donald Trump? Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our conversation about homelessness, these policies that are being proposed or have been put into action with executive orders by Donald Trump. What does that mean closer to home? We're joined by Terry Bailing. She's the Director of Communications at Haven for Hope in San Antonio. Haven for Hope, for the last 15 years, it's been an innovative, groundbreaking, a solution-oriented establishment helping people who are homeless and helping them get off the streets. Terry, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David, for having me.
So when we're seeing a lot of federal cuts to programs, I know that there were Haven for Hope has gotten grants in the past. Mm-hmm. What have we seen at Haven for Hope in terms of changes with the Trump administration?
Well, fortunately for Haven for Hope, we have a good mix of public and private funding. And that is one of the reasons why we believe we're successful. Because when you have unrestricted, diverse funding sources, then you can really meet our we can meet our clients where they are and evolve our programming. So in terms of federal funding, we do not receive a ton of federal funding, and most of that is passed through other sources such as Close to Home, our continuum of care organization here in San Antonio, and they funnel a lot of that funding to the different homeless response system organizations.
So, but I had heard that you were going to have to raise additional funds in order to maintain operations?
Yes. So that's due to the end of the COVID era funding and some of the ARPA funds.
Okay. So tell me about that, and what are the impacts?
So those are funds that were available during the time of the pandemic and COVID, and it was passed through not only federal but local government funding as well. And as those are sunsetting, we're just going to have to find some new funding sources and seek additional city and local and state funding.
And $10 million, is that the number?
That's what we're projecting at this time. We're putting our budget together for next year.
All right. So over the last 15 years that Haven for Hope has been in operation, how has homelessness changed over that time?
Homelessness is such a complicated issue, and that's something I want the audience to recognize, that it's not a one-size-fits-all. Every person is experiencing a different story.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you're saying that, because mm-hmm. there are people who are temporarily or transitionally homeless.
Correct.
Because they, you know, everyone's living paycheck to paycheck.
Correct.
And you get a paycheck behind because of something, you know, out of your control. Next thing you know, you don't have a backup system. You don't have familial support, and maybe you end up out on the street, and then your whole life can be just spin out of control. You lose your documents. You lose all sorts of things, and you need help just to kind of get back on the right path.
Absolutely.
And then there are other people who have mental health episodes. Mm-hmm. Other people who have substance episodes. So there's got to be ways to look at homelessness. Is the word is so broad, I don't think it's really adequate to talk about. You know, we see a person on the street, we say that person may be unhoused or homeless, but we don't know the other part of the story.
Correct. Correct. We recently went through a trauma certification program where we are now a trauma-informed agency, a certified trauma-informed agency. So we take a person-centered approach. Your situation is going to be different from my situation. And at any given time, we could become homeless, right? So like you said, you're one emergency away from experiencing homelessness yourself. So what we're going to do is whenever a client comes to Haven for Hope, we're going to talk to them about their particular situation and put together a person-centered plan that meets their needs and put together an income plan, a housing plan that addresses their root cause of their particular homeless episode.
But, you know, we are seeing numbers for the people who are homeless in San Antonio. The 2024 point in time count recorded 3,372 people on that single night. That was almost a 7% increase. But we're seeing that it's the problem is bigger than that.
Was that the 2024?
The 2024.
Okay, so we have the 2025 numbers. It was 3,625 total experiencing homelessness in our community. It is a slight increase, but it's important to note that 2,489 of those individuals were in shelter on night of the point in time count. 47% of them were experiencing homelessness for the first time. I think that there's a lot of assumptions out there of the chronically homeless, right? The unsheltered population tends to be more of our chronically homeless individuals that people are seeing when they're driving to work or seeing when they go to the parks. And our outreach team, I've been out with them before, and it's amazing work that they do because they are building trust. Okay, they are connecting the unsheltered to resources, but it can take anywhere from 7 to 9, 10 or more meaningful experiences with them to get them to trust you enough.
I've gone out with them.
Yes, it's amazing work, but you have to meet people where they are.
Let's go to a caller. I guess Rick's next. Rick, you're on the air. Go ahead, Rick.
Oh, thank you very much. I'd like to reinforce that I think Haven for Hope is a fantastic model. It's something that we in San Antonio are super proud of. And I think it comes closer to the housing and wraparound support that we talked about in the last session. So kudos to all of you at Haven for Hope. My follow-up question to that, though, is that the majority of the urban centers where homelessness is plaguing us and where we're struggling to deal with it are today and have been for quite some time led by Democratic administrations. And we can sit here and rant all day about what Trump's doing. But my question is, how was Haven for Hope able to tackle this problem with action, as opposed to just talking theories and ideologies? But San Francisco and Memphis and Chicago and so many cities that just have New York, just horrible, horrible homelessness problems. What can you guys share that sets aside Trump topics and talks to Democratic administrations? And I'd like to hear Haven for Hope respond. David, if you could stand down for a few minutes.
You bet. So, go right ahead, Terry.
Thank you. And thank you for those comments. We are super fortunate at Haven for Hope that we had a vision by our founder, Mr. Bill Greehy, who is well known in this community as an oil and businessman, correct? You know, and he had the vision and at the time worked with Mayor Hardberger and our local elected officials and community leaders, and they tackled this head on. But how did they do it? They went around the country. They went and looked and researched how are other communities addressing homelessness. And what they found is most success came from combining shelter with wraparound resources. And that is why Haven for Hope is considered a national model to address homelessness. We could not do it without the work of our 75 plus partners and organizations that come alongside us and combining the medical, dental, vision care, behavioral health care, substance use, providing all of those resources for our clients while they are in safe shelter and transitioning out of homelessness is what makes our system work. We don't have a time limit in how long our clients are with us. And we are able to serve about 1,380 to 1,400 individuals and families a day. And we believe that that leads to some of that success.
That's what I was going to say. Bill Greehy, singular individual. He made a lot of money doing a lot of things, you know, but he had a vision, and not just for this, but also with cancer research in San Antonio.
Yes.
And everyone knew Bill Greehy as a man of excellence and commitment and non-compromise. And when he went all in on Haven for Hope, other people followed, the Mays family, other people
yes.
followed, knowing that this was going to work. And that's what leadership can do.
Absolutely. And it's the public-private partnership. We give tours all year from other communities, other counties and city leaders that come from all over the country and say, how can we replicate this in our community?
It's
and
like,
we
find say, yourself a Bill Greehy.
find a Bill Greehy. Find 22 acres near downtown. We really were fortunate to have all of those things fall into place and align. And it is what makes us successful. And when our clients leave Haven and go into housing, 92% of them are still housed the following year.
So how much time does a client stay at Haven for Hope?
On average, it's about 4 months on our transformational campus, and it could be 28 days or so on our South Campus, which is our low barrier shelter. That is more of a transient population, but it's important to know that the reason for a low barrier shelter is to give somebody that feeling of safe and dignified care where they have access to the resources they need to change their lives. So we're meeting them where they are, and when they are ready to access those resources, they are available for them. But in the meantime, they get to sleep indoors, they get access to 3 meals a day, and they can work on what they need to work on to turn their lives around.
All right, so we're going to talk more about that, the accountability model that Haven has. Some people find that too hard. And so, I mean, you say, why do we have Haven for Hope? But yet I see so many people under the highway when I drive to work, all sorts of people living in these drainage ditches, and they don't want to go in. So what is happening there? We can talk about that. We'll also get callers on the air. The number is 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. Also, how do you see, I know you don't want to get political, but, you know, this Trump deal, is that this executive order, does it make sense? Can it work? How does that fit with what we're doing here in San Antonio? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Terry Belling is with us. She's the Director of Communications at Haven for Hope here in San Antonio, as we're talking about homelessness and also about executive orders signed by Donald Trump that are going to tell cities across the nation how to deal with homelessness. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Giselle on the phones. Giselle, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. My question was, Haven for Hope is a wonderful organization that services mostly downtown population, and I was wondering, what would it take to have, like, satellite locations around the city that provide similar or the same services and resources or close to it, because there's just so many pockets of homelessness. I feel like we might be better served to kind of to have certain locations in those certain areas to better affect the population, the homeless population around the city.
Interesting question, Giselle. Thanks for that. So, Terry.
Yes, thank you for your question. We agree that we need more permanent emergency shelter capacity in our community. While we are located downtown, it is important to remember that we are Haven for Hope of Bexar County. So we are here to serve all of Bexar County. And while it may mean somebody coming from the north side or the west side, we work with them when they're looking at their housing options. And our housing team is great at helping people identify where they want to live, where do they want to go when they leave Haven, and get them connected to those resources so they could be successful and sustainable once they leave Haven for Hope. What will it take? Resources. It will take location, it'll take space, it'll take financial resources and staffing and facilities. And it is a lot. The reason why we are so successful is everything is contained on one campus, and we have partners that have office space directly on our campus and also come and provide support and services throughout the week. So I think it would be great to see it spread throughout the community. I don't know that it would necessarily be Haven for Hope, but other organizations. It is a need within Bexar County and the city of San Antonio.
So the location that you have now, I mean, it's nearby Robert B. Greene Hospital, the county jail. There's some county drug treatment stuff nearby.
Yes.
There's a lot going on there. It does seem to have a lot of synergy, and I wonder, some people are looking at that real estate and licking their lips and going, man, think about all the, you know, how much money we could make if we could get these Haven for Hope people to move away. You know, what's going on there? Anything?
Not that we've heard. There are properties around us. Right now we are at capacity and we have nowhere to go. We have no room to grow or to build on our campus. So I don't know what is happening with the surrounding properties located next to us, but you are correct. Having access to public transportation and access to the resources that are located around downtown is very beneficial for our clients. And we have, you know, the opportunity to look at what we did 15 years ago and how can that be replicated within our community or other communities across the country. Best management practices are the way to go.
Leadership,
exactly.
So what do you think about what Donald Trump is doing with these executive orders, basically telling cities that they have to criminalize outdoor sleeping and homelessness and things like that?
Well, as was mentioned in the first half hour, if you arrest someone for public camping or trespassing and you're giving them a fine that they can't pay, they're not able to make their court appearance. We're just creating this vicious cycle where it's creating more barriers down the road for someone to receive employment or get into housing. And so that's why the community court system that we have in San Antonio is so important. I don't know exactly how the executive order would be implemented here, but our community does have a need for increased behavioral health and substance use resources and access to those resources for those who need it. And so if this order created an abundance of that or opportunities to expand that, it could be a win for us or any community.
That if, we're still finding out about that if. There's a lot of unknowns.
Correct.
It does seem like the Trump administration, the whole policy is move out of my eyesight. Whatever you do, I just don't want to have to see it. So I don't know if that's a policy or not. But let's talk about at Haven for Hope. I've heard it called as an accountability model, mm-hmm. that you do expect the people who take advantage of your services, the people who, your clients, that they do have to follow the rules. And is that, and some people say they can't do that. That's why I still see homeless people
right.
under the highway and they don't want to follow the rules at Haven for Hope. Is that right?
We have encountered that when our outreach teams go out and engage with the unsheltered population. We do hear that from time to time, that Haven for Hope has too many rules, or I've been there before, I didn't like it. Congregate shelter isn't for everyone. Part of our campus is a more congregate shelter setting, so we can understand that. We want to be available for those who want our services and want to engage in our services. That's why we put together the person-centered plans. And we tell our clients every year when we have a graduation and invite people who have left Haven back to celebrate their success, we tell them they did the work. We helped guide them. We gave them access to what they needed, but they did the work and they need to celebrate that success. Do we have rules? Absolutely. You cannot have 1,400 people living in an area without rules. So yes, there are rules and there are some expectations that you are going to be engaged in case management and a housing or an income plan, especially for our North Campus transformational portion of the campus. But on the low barrier side, it is an optional opt-in service model that we operate on that side of campus.
Let's talk about homelessness prevention. So if someone does find themselves, you know, that they're running low, they had an emergency, they can't make rent, they're going to get evicted, what can they do?
They can call the City of San Antonio's Community Connections Hotline, and I apologize, I don't have it memorized at the moment. But there are programs in place and funding in place, not only in the City of San Antonio, but Bexar County as well, that there's grants, there's different programs in place through CPS Energy and SAWS. You might see on your bill it says falling behind or can't make your payment, contact us and we'll work with you. So there are prevention dollars out there within our community. United Way is another great source for people to contact United Way of San Antonio and find out what assistance programs are out there. But really, making sure that our community knows the resources are available and to let their friends and neighbors know as well. We encounter a lot of individuals that they don't want to ask for help. They don't know how, or they don't want to, or pride gets in the way, and help is available if somebody wants it.
Right. So people need to reach out.
Yes.
And we need to talk about this and let them know that,
yes,
you know, you never know where you're going to end up on these situations, and you can. So do I call? So should I call Haven? Should I show up at Haven? What do I do?
So Haven for Hope is designed to assist those who are already experiencing homelessness. You actually would need to show us proof that you're experiencing homelessness to engage in our services. But there is the Community Connections Hotline through the City of San Antonio. There's the United Way. There are ways to help. And if you call Haven for Hope, we can also direct you in those resources, direct you to the resources.
So are there like sobriety tests or prohibitions or whatever at Haven?
So on the north side of campus, there is a requirement to be sober because we have Pay It Forward operating on North Campus. That's one of our partners that offers sober living for up to a year for those who have been through a recovery program. And we also have children and families living on North Campus. It's not a zero tolerance. If you blow hot on the breathalyzer, we're going to tell you to come back in a couple hours and test again. And so we do have sobriety requirements for enrollment in North Campus, but South Campus, those requirements are not, we do not enforce those requirements for South Campus.
So earlier you told me that the loss of these COVID dollars, federal dollars, mm-hmm. they're clawing back and then it's also sunsetting. $10 million need to be raised in order to preserve the services at Haven for Hope. How are you guys going to raise that money and what good can be done?
So that's in private funding that we need, private fundraising that we need to have. And typically we've been raising between $6 and $9 million each year as it is. So a percentage of our funding pie has always come through private donations. But the community can support in so many ways. They can support us financially, but they can also support us by volunteering, by being advocates for Haven, in-kind donations. We take those and those go directly to
like
our clients. Clothing, shoes, small household appliances, those go directly to our clients free of charge.
Okay, so I could just, if I get a box of, you know, hand sanitizer, socks,
yes,
things like that, bring them over?
Yes, brand new socks and underwear.
Yes.
We do require brand new socks and underwear,
yes,
but
course.
Everything else we will take gently used.
All right, Terry Burling, thank you so much. The Director of Communications at Haven for Hope in San Antonio. Appreciate you coming and talking to us today.
Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.